All right, here we go, boys and girls. welcome to another Wizards Weekly Musing. I mean, at this point, it's kind of not weekly; it's more almost yearly. But you know what? I'm gonna make this more often. I know you guys have been asking, and been kind of trying to focus on a couple other things. But you know what? Let's get back to the podcast, especially with the pandemic. I think it'll be fun. You know, people need more. People are getting more into podcasts and whatnot. So you know what? I'm gonna be here, putting out more content in podcast form for you guys. So, welcome, one and all. For most of you who might be new to the podcast, you know, just a quick little background on me. I mean, most of the people who are coming here know me from Instagram, Wizard of Soho. Obviously, Wizard of Soho has been banned from Facebook and Instagram, and we'll go over why that happened and what the future holds. But other than that, you know, I'm come from nothing, like come from just straight up grinded up from middle office, back office, middle office. I mean, you guys can go follow my new Instagram stuff. I'll tell you what you guys need to follow. But just a little quick background up, you know, bond trader on the West Coast. Do everything macro based investing. I guess I would be close to, like, you know, you could say, because we don't have in the buy side like managing director, but I guess equivalent would be a managing director level. I have people who work for me. So yeah, that's kind of a little background. Obviously, my expertise is macro investing, macro economy, global macro, global fixed income. But obviously, I look at everything. And you know, we can let's talk about a few things today. Let's talk about we're gonna talk about why I got banned from Instagram. We're gonna talk about what my views are on the future of America, on the pandemic. We're gonna go through some investment stuff. Talk about some of the, you know, core questions for 2021. Things that can help my fellow investors and people looking to, you know, kind of dip into the market. And we'll talk a little philosophy, and then, you know what, we'll get into all the questions that you guys put in. For most of the people who reach out to me through my new Instagram, and I put one of those AMA things, you know, ask me whatever, ask me anything, and a whole bunch of you put on a bunch of questions for me to answer during the podcast. So we'll do that. So let's just do a little bit, you know, figure out how you guys can get a hold of me. So I have a new Instagram. It's at not the Wizard of Soho. It is not the Wizard of Soho. That is the tag for my new Instagram. So make sure you follow me there. I'm going to be posting all my wisdom, philosophy, market thoughts, all the cooking I do. I mean, you guys know who already follow me or used to follow me. Lots of baking, cooking, culinary stuff, travel, and just, you know, good, fun things that young people, you know, enjoy. And for my next level theories, pushing the boundaries, and those kind of content, I'm no longer going to be putting that on my core Instagram page. That's going to be on a new page that I started called The Bond Army. That is The Bond, as a B-O-N-D, Army. So make sure you guys follow Not the Wizard of Soho and The Bond Army, and we will be going at 1,000 miles per hour. I'm going to be putting out content like I've never done before. We will not let Instagram and Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg win this battle against and this battle against creators who are trying to, you know, fight the status quo. We will fight against the tyranny together. So let's see, why did I get banned? People didn't know I had a huge following that I built over the last 8 years. I started my account in 2012, and I built it from the ground up, from zero to over 41,000 followers, core followers, loyal followers who were, you know, a lot of people have been motivated from my posts. I mean, people have joined fixed income trading, bond trading, just from following me. And they, you know, people who are going to go into engineering, who are going to go into all kinds of different fields, even pharmacists, doctors who are like, listen, I followed you and you know what, you were inspirational. And now there's one who's, you know, bond trader in Citibank, or there's a bond trader in Morgan Stanley, a couple of research guys in different buy side firms. And it's just endless. And even you don't have to be finance. I mean, now the following is, you know, there's a big non-finance following. You know, as obviously my Alphaholics organization, for those who don't know what the Alphaholics is. Alphaholics is basically this fraternity that I created of like-minded individuals from around the world. It's a co-ed fraternity. Basically, I mean, we have all kinds of people. We have real estate guys in Dallas. We got small business owners. We got, you know, sales, traders, portfolio managers from London, Switzerland, Australia. We got all kinds of people. I mean, and we keep it capped at like, so right now we have around 80 members. Our cap is 100 members. We have almost 1,000 people waitlist, a 2-year waitlist currently. And we selectively pick the board. We have a board organized that picks people. So yeah, that's, and you guys can follow Alphaholics Anon, on Instagram as well. There's going to be a lot of information I'm going to be putting out there on how people can join. Or you could go to alphaholicsanonymous.com and apply there. So back to why I got banned. So basically I was banned with no chance of appeal. The only time this happens, and from some of my contacts I was able to find out, is that they labeled me as hate speech, which is really funny because, first of all, I'm a minority myself that came from nothing and grinded my way up, and I've never put any form of hate speech. But the thing is that people kept reporting me, you know, obviously jealousy and haters, people found me and reported me. But Instagram has, because I post a lot of, you know, controversial things, pushing the boundaries, not accepting the status quo, maybe at times, you know, post-conservative ideologies. And, you know, Instagram has recently changed the terms and conditions so that they can target people who post such content and ban and delete them without appeal. So they have a process where they always let you appeal, but they have put me in a criteria where I cannot appeal my account. So it is permanently banned without appeal. And the core reason is because I pushed for things like, you know, questioning the idea that, you know, is this pandemic as bad as it sounds, or as bad as the media is making it out to be, or the government? Should the lockdown happen in America? Is the lockdown working? At no point did I say that COVID is a hoax. I'm just saying that maybe we need to question a couple of things. You know, let people take the risk. And, you know, clearly in America, the lockdown doesn't work. I'm not saying the lockdown doesn't work elsewhere and that we don't need a lockdown. Like, yeah, if you want to do the lockdown, then you need to lock down aggressively like they did in China. You need to lock people in their homes. And that's not going to work in, you know, America or Canada or European, you know, UK and stuff. Like, a lockdown's not going to work. You need to instill the risk into people. If you're high risk, obviously COVID's I have family members who have gotten COVID. I have, you know, I have an aunt who passed away from COVID. I'm not saying it's not real or it's a hoax. I'm just saying the lockdown, the shutdown of the system, there is more to it than just a pandemic and a virus. And the point is, give the risk to the people. That is what I've been saying this whole time. It's not that I'm saying this is fake or it's a hoax. This is real. People are dying. You need to put a mask on if you're in the public. Yeah, I'm pro-mask. I'm sorry. Even to my conservative people who follow me, I think, honestly, I don't even want to get a regular flu. I don't even want to get a cold from people. Like, why would I want to get that? So yeah, put a mask on. Let's keep the mask on. Let businesses say, hey, you cannot enter without the mask. That's it. Plain and simple. If a business says you can enter without a mask and people are entering without masks, that's the risk people take. This is America. We have the freedom. Listen, I come from India. Like, people coming from countries that do not have freedoms, like in China, Russia, like they do in America. This is what you choose. You choose to be here. This is the greatest country in the world. You have the choice that you can do whatever you want. You want to go into a restaurant that does not have a mask policy, that's your choice, that's your prerogative. I'm not saying you should do or you're not, but you choose your risk. That is the beauty of America. You choose your risk. And that is what should happen. You cannot, you know, force people in I mean, people are going through, there's going to be other problems people are having, mental health issues, the suicide rate is through the roof, people are not able to feed their families. I mean, just give the power to the people. People will make the right decision at times. And if they don't, you know what? It is survival of the fittest. They will be wiped out, and that's the choice they made. This is the risk that people are taking, and you need to let people take that risk. Let them go out, and if they get it and they die, that's on them. That's the choice they made. But that is the beauty of the system, that the risk will be taken by the risk takers. You take a high standard deviation risk, just like an investment. You take an out-of-the-money call, out-of-the-money put option, and you could have a outsized return, or you could lose everything. And that's the beauty. That's how it should be. And if you're high risk, sit at home. No one's telling you to get out. This will end at some point. Take your vaccine. If someone doesn't want to take this vaccine because they think it's been fast-forwarded, and there's arguments on both sides, I think the vaccine should be taken. I mean, I have, you know, parents and stuff who are high risk, and I'll probably take the vaccine. But my point is, yes, it's fine to question it. Why not question the vaccine? You know, now people say, you know, it came out so fast. Yeah, there was a lot of funding put in, which is not put in for a lot of other diseases. That's why the vaccine doesn't come out this fast. But, you know, fine. Let people, you know, there's nothing wrong with questioning. Some of these things are not facts. These are not facts because, like a scientific fact, like theory of relativity. Oh, sorry, so that's a theory. Not so that's, you know, yeah, it's proven, but like gravity is a fact, right? There's no, the earth is round is a fact. Now, telling there's this pandemic is so devastating is not necessarily a fact. They're trying to prove it through statistics, right? Let me tell you something amazing. One of the people who has been pushing for, you know, this vaccine and pushing for lockdowns, Bill Gates. Bill Gates, and this is another podcast that I listened to not too long ago, and this guy was shut down too. I'll post on my Instagram, this person, and on my Twitter. Oh, by the way, my Twitter is at Wizard of the Soho as well, so you can follow me there. But Bill Gates, years ago, on his reading list, put out this great... book, you know, that's like a book list every year, and he put out this book called How to Lie with Statistics, and it's a phenomenal book, and everybody should go read it. And this was put out, if I've talked about this, I would get banned again, which I already have been banned because I tried to question the status quo and question the statistics. But go read How to Lie with Statistics. This is a book that was recommended by Bill Gates. I bet you he would never accept or try and push for this now, because it's just the way, like I'll give you an idea. And these are a couple excerpts that this other podcast talked about as well. But let's just, a couple pieces, you know, I'm going to tell you from the book. For example, this is a little piece in there. You may have heard the discouraging news that the 1952 was the worst polio year in medical history. This conclusion was based on what might seem all the evidence anyone could have asked for. There were far more cases reported in that year than ever before. Okay? But then when experts went back to these figures, they found a few things that were more encouraging. One was that there were so many children at the most susceptible ages in 1952 that cases were bound to be at a record number. If the rate remained level. Another was a general consciousness of polio was leading to more frequent diagnosis. Listen to that. Was leading to frequent more diagnosis and recording of mild cases. Finally, and this is the best part, there was an increased financial incentive there being more polio insurance and more aid available from the National Foundation of Infantile Paralysis. So obviously all this threw a considerable doubt on the notion that maybe polio had reached this, you know, crazy level back then. Another piece from this book. Common sense has somehow failed in the face of convincingly precise and authoritative numbers. The way they put out statistics that people went in back in the day, that this is, I'm just kind of going over what the book kind of talks about, that they basically said that all these people, that governments and people kind of use these statistics to kind of push for this narrative on polio, that it was so much worse than it actually was. some other pieces in the book. The guilt does not always lie with the medical profession alone. Public pressure and hasty journalism often launch a treatment that is unproved, particularly when the demand is great and the statistical background hazy. So it was with cold vaccines that were popular some years back and the antihistamines more recently. Sounds kind of familiar, right? This isn't a book that was recommended by Bill Gates, by the way, just so we're clear. Another, a good deal of the popularity of these unsuccessful cures sprang from the unreliable nature of the ailment and from a defect of logic. Given time, a cold will cure itself. Sounds familiar. Another little piece. A remarkable instance. Okay, here, let me. How many is enough? That's a tricky one, though. This is another piece from the book. It depends, among other things, on how large and how varied a population you are studying by sampling, and sometimes numbers in the sample are not what it appears to be. A remarkable instance came of this statistical massage came in connection with the test of polio vaccine a few years ago. It appeared to be impressively large-scale experiment, as medical ones go. 450 children were vaccinated in a community and 680 were left unvaccinated as controls. Shortly thereafter, the community was visited by an epidemic. Not one of the vaccinated children contracted a recognizable case of polio. Neither did any of the controls. What the experimenters had overlooked or not understood in setting up their project was the low incidence of paralytic polio. At the usual rate, only 2 cases would have been expected in a group this size. And so the test was doomed from the start to have no meaning. Kind of sounds familiar, right? And I'll talk about this a little bit more in my, you know. I mean, just go read the book and you guys can make your own opinion. Because you know what? If I start talking too much about this, this podcast is going to get banned. I'm going to get banned on Instagram again. And I'm just going to keep getting canceled like I have been. So do your work. But that is my point at the end of the day. Let people have the risk. Let people make their own judgment. I'm just questioning the numbers. I'm not saying people aren't dying. I'm just saying the way the numbers are being produced and given in the media. I mean, it is unreal. Like, look at who's winning here, right? The government is winning. The government is basically breaking your legs and then giving you a check and saying, giving you crutches and saying, look, you could not survive without the government. Without our stimulus checks. That's basically what they're doing. They're saying you can't go to work, but here's a stimulus check so you can be dependent on us. And this is what's going to break people down. And there's a certain amount of people who are like, listen, I'm okay with sitting at home and just doing nothing and having things handed to me. And there's a big new generation that's coming up that are like, listen, I just want things handed to me. And that is not me. And that is not a lot of you. You want to work hard because you want to achieve that glory. You're not in it to make $50,000 a year or $100,000 a year. You're here to make $1 million a year, $10 million. Why not make $100 million? Why not us? If people can, why not us? And that's what I'm saying. I do not want to be in a country where I'm paying taxes, where I only end up with, you know, make $1 million and I only end up with $100,000 because I have to pay for everybody else who wants to sit at home and do nothing. So let me take my risk. If I fail in my business, all these small businesses are getting shut down. I mean, it is ridiculous. We're being forced into this. All small business, this is the greatest wealth transfer that's happened in the history of time. This year alone, a quarter of the entire US dollar's money supply has been created. And who's got it? Who did it go to the conglomerates? Who's open right now in a full phase lockdown? Who's open? The Walmarts of the world, the Amazons of the world. These are the people killing it, not the small businesses. All these people are getting forced to go to these. You can be in a line at Walmart with 1,000 people, 6 feet apart, but you cannot be in a restaurant 20 feet apart from each other. Like, do you understand how messed up that is? Why are we okay with this? Why are we okay? You know why we're okay? Because of this check that we're just sitting at home getting from the government. Because we're getting this handout. So we're like, hey, I'm just going to take this unemployment insurance. I'm not going to work hard. You know what? And, you know, I'm just going to vote for people who are just going to give me this thing. You know what? I'm making more sitting at home in my, you know, whatever government subsidized building than I can do elsewhere. But what about the people who come, you know, the immigrants who came here for a better life? We don't want the handout. I want to work for my money. I want to work hard so I can be successful and, you know, have a family and, like, provide for my family and just do, like, I came for the glory. You came for the glory. This is what we're here for. Why not let me fight for my own glory? We all want our immortality. We all want to establish our legacy. I don't want to be sitting and doing nothing at home and fucking watching TikTok and, you know, listening to whoever, Mark Zuckerberg's or the tyrannical monsters and demons of the world, the Greta Thunbergs and the Soros and AOC telling me that I have to sit at home and be sheep and be a Muppet of this world, but here's a check, so it's okay. No, I want to be out there. I want to grind. I want to work hard. I want to be able to set a legacy for myself and for my future people. I came without a trust fund, but I want to have a trust fund so my children and my children's children and their children's children don't have to work. Or they understand and they work even harder than me because they saw the grind in their parents, what they came from. I do not want things handed to me, and no, nor should you. You did not come here to sit at home and have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez give you a $500, $600, $1,000 check and then be their Muppet and be the sheep and be on Facebook all day and be on Instagram all day and go just be buying things on Amazon. No, we came to build things. We came, this is what the founding fathers of America wanted. Build, set up your own destiny. I want to set up my own destiny, and I will not let the government or Instagram or anyone shut me down, and nor should you. We need to question each and everything that is put out. Question the statistics. This is not, statistics is not math, like a proof of a theory. This is not an equation. These are numbers, empirical evidence that can be massaged. I have research papers, done empirical studies. You can massage statistics. Like I just told you, Bill Gates that recommended a book on how to lie with statistics. This, I mean, even Trump questioned the statistics. And I'm not saying Trump is the smartest man. He's not. And this guy, Trump is one of the biggest, you know, hits you head fakes with numbers all the time. But he questioned it and he was shut down by the media. It is not that Biden won the election. You are mistaken. It is not Biden or Kamala Harris or the Democrats who won the election. It is the media. The media that is telling you what you should do won the election because Trump went up against the media. If Trump had shut his mouth and not gotten up against the media, he would be president in 2020 again, up to 2024. He lost because the entire media went against him. The social media, the regular media, everybody went against him because he questioned the media, the fake news network. He basically is, I mean, yes, some of the, you know, he obviously makes up a lot of shit, but the core idea is there. Then that's the core idea that we all should have. Question the media, question people. Just because somebody told you on Instagram or Facebook or even me, question me, right? Go do your own research. Question people. That is what I'm saying. Don't take face value because the government is telling you, because your governor is telling you. What are these governors doing? Newsom, everyone. They're telling you to sit at home. Stay away from, you know, fine, stay away from family, that's your choice. Don't do anything. This is the worst. Everyone's gonna die. We're killing our families. You're gonna kill your mom, you're gonna kill your grandpa, you're gonna kill your friends and babies. And what are they doing? They're out there, they're going to restaurants. Governor Newsom going to French Laundry in groups of 10 and partying. You got Mayor of Colorado, the place I'm in, Windsor, in Canada, the mayor over here went to restaurants. So I mean, this is ridiculous. You're telling me, I mean, Who you know, just look at who's gaining. Where's the money? Look at the flow of money. That will give you an answer on you should question this or not. The conglomerates, the Walmarts, the Amazons, the Facebooks, the Instagram, these people are making the money. This is the future of the government. This is the Skynet. This is the Skynet from Terminator. This is how it begins. They slowly force you. These are people, the people who run Facebook, Google, all this stuff. These are people who did not have social lives, did not have, you know, the type of a different type of vision. They were at home. They were sitting at home doing nothing. Nobody liked them. So they built these tech companies, you know, whatever. And more power to them. It's amazing. They're inspirational. But they have a different mindset. Their mindset is everybody needs to sit at home and put on a virtual reality set and be in our world. We want to control their environment. They do not get to be outside in the regular environment. They need to be at home and be in our reality, not the reality that exists. And that is what they want. That is why the pandemic is what they want. They want you to be inside your home, stuck, and then buy a virtual reality set and be in this reality that they control, which is already happening. They control the feed that comes into your mind. They're controlling what you see on Instagram, on Facebook, where we're spending all our time because we're forced to be inside and not outside trying to build our own future. So they're controlling and building your future. Like, they're banned me because I was trying to fight the system and trying to fight the status quo and trying to put a different image, or maybe an image that they did not agree with. And that is what they're trying to fight. And that is what the fight of our lifetime is right now. The roaring 20s is going to be one of the greatest times for us, but can also be one of the worst things setting for the next century, where we give up control, where we have completely lost to the Instagram, the Facebook, the Amazon, to the government, the tyranny that is going to take over. We get to make that choice. And that is my entire thing. And this is why I was banned, because I spoke up. I tried to maybe try and influence other ideas that they are not okay with you thinking. They want you to be the sheep, the Muppets, that listen and only follow what they say through these manipulative, potentially manipulative statistics. Question the status quo always. Do not accept where you are in life and what you see. If everybody else can do it, why not us? Why not us make $1 million a year? I refuse to be on the handout of the government. You should too. Okay, anyways. So that is why. So make sure, go follow me, Not the Wizard of Soho and the Bond Army. Make sure you follow Let's Not Let Them Win. These will get banned, I'm sure, very soon. I'm working on trying to find some way to maybe go to a different network where I'm not going to be censored as much. So I'm working on it. So let's see. And whoever's interested in joining our group called Alphaholic Anonymous, make sure you guys come join, go apply online. All right. Let's see. Let's kind of switch things a little bit. Let's start talking a little bit about philosophy. More the philosophy of investing. The philosophy of philosophy of life. How I look at myself now and wish how I had looked at it before. So basically, you know, you have to kind of look at life and investing. I feel like the mistake a lot of people make, especially young people, and I made this mistake too, and I'm hoping, you know, people like you don't make, is how to look at investing of your life. You need to have your life in a type of asset allocation. So you need to see what your core risks of your life currently are. So let's say, for example, you're in a job where you have a very fixed pay but no bonus system. So you're a salaried job, and you want to kind of try and make, you know, set yourself up. So in your life, your asset, the allocation of your life, you don't have much risk because you're in a salaried job and you think, you know, it's a very stable job. So I don't have much risk. This is when you need to start allocating risk. You need to start thinking, okay, I don't have risk to the world. What is risk to the world? What is a proxy to risk to the world? The stock market. The stock market is a proxy to risk. So if you're in a job where you think you have a very stable job, you need to allocate your own risk off to the stock market in terms of allocating your risk to the world. Means you want the upside. If the world does really well, you want that upside. Because if you don't have that upside, you'll never be able to ride the glory train that everybody else will be able to if they had exposure to. Like, it's taking risk in life, right? With risk gets reward. So if you are not taking any risk, you're not going to get any reward. So what's a way to take some risk if you're in a job where you're just getting, you know, a good consistent pay, but you're not getting, you know, that upside out there? So this is how I kind of look at life. So if you're in a job where you're not able to get a lot of risk to the world so that you're not getting a reward, that's when you need to start allocating resources in your life to, you know, these kind of things. Maybe you have a friend who wants to start a new company, so maybe invest with that, or maybe you want to just invest in the stock market. So you need to start investing in things where if the world is really well, you'll be rewarded. But you have that, you know, job where you still have a stable job. Now, what about people who are in like Wall Street and things like that, where your job or whatever job you have, say you have a risky job where you could lose your job, or you're in a business where you could lose your business any day, well, who knows? So you already have exposure to a lot of risk. So you already have this risky environment where your pay comes from a bonus or whatever, right? So in this scenario, you need to allocate your risk in a little bit smarter way. You need to start looking at bonds, because bonds are what rally when the world goes to the shitter. So in March this year, because of the pandemic, and in 2008, things that when people allocated their risk in a smart way, they were rewarded because they allocated their risk to cash or they allocated their risk to bonds. Bonds will outperform equities usually in a in an environment where the world is just going to shit. So that's kind of something that people need to start kind of look. And that's kind of how I look at that's the philosophy of life for me. Whenever I think I'm in a stable, you know, job environment, I start allocating more to equities, more to like risky stocks and stuff like that. And then when I think I'm in a job where I think most of my pay is going to come from bonus and something like that, then I don't allocate that much to equities and I allocate more to bonds, because if the world does really well, I'm going to get paid really well. And if the world doesn't do well, I won't get paid well. So I need to diversify my risk of life. And that's now you need to start looking at things. And that's just how life should be. You need to start always allocating your own life risk, right? And then there's an equation for yourself, you know. How do you want to allocate? You're 60-40, 60% stock, 60% check your finance. And you need to do that math for yourself. You need to see how much risk you have, how your cash flows are set up for your jobs, if you have side businesses, whatever. And that's how you need to figure out. The biggest problem people make is they don't allocate their risk properly, and then when shit hits the fan, they get fucked, right? Or if they allocate their risk, you know, incorrect way, where they're doing too much to, risk averse, then they're not able to get this upside. When the world does really well, that they get fucked then too. So this is something that people need to kind of, you know, think about. And I think this is a pretty smart way of, you know, leading life and investing in life. So, you know, maybe, you know, think about something like that and see how, you know, where that kind of takes you. All right, let's talk about the next thing. Something that a lot of people, you know, I'm going to talk a little bit about this. The biggest questions and risk for 2021, right? From a very investment, a macro economy kind of way, just a couple questions I just made up for myself, which I think could be useful and could be, something good to think about for you guys who are looking to invest in 2021 in equities, bonds, whatever. And then I'll go through some of the questions that you guys asked me after this, okay? So let's start off very, very simple. Let's think about this question. Will the third wave of COVID-19 basically cause a fall? You know, this is very America-based, but it kind of holds for, G10, let's say, or developed markets. Will this cause a fall in GDP again in Q1 2021? And, you know, I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think it's going to... Because... Yes, we're locking down, but we also got the stimulus coming, which is going to boost. So, the long-dreaded winter virus resurgence, you know, has brought new peaks in daily cases and fatalities. It's leading a lot of forecasters to call for a second dip in GDP this winter as restaurants and other virus-sensitive businesses are being shut down again. But, you know, I mean, think about it. You know, despite the severity in the health crisis, state and local, you know, authorities have only tightened restrictions. They've not restricted that much in America as much as you would think the first time around in March, right? Texas and stuff is like all fully open. Basically, Florida is basically fully open. So, you know, we got the the vaccine coming out and people are getting vaccinated. So over the next month or two, early vaccination efforts targeting the most vulnerable segments of the population should produce a decline in the hospitalizations that we're seeing. You know, the key variable that has most often forced, you know, authorities and governments to impose new restrictions. So, it's unlikely the restrictions get much tighter. So we should, you know, despite the surge in virus, state level restrictions have tightened only slightly. Like, there's a lot of data you can see that they actually haven't, you know, tightened as much. Second, you know, the voluntary economic response to the third wave kind of looks modest. Like, there's, you know, just think about it. I mean, we got a big, you know, potentially a big stimulus coming. We got new funding coming in. But if you just look at, you know, we got this, what, $900 billion COVID relief package, you know, that will provide this big, large fiscal boost to disposable income, especially if they do the $2,000 thing. I mean, regardless, even with $600, it'll be a big boost. There's a lot of support coming for the unemployed and for small business. Another round of, like I said, stimulus checks that should cushion, you know, layoffs and things like that. So I think Q1 should be okay, and especially with all the vaccines and whatnot. Now, this stimulus check, this is, you know, I could do a whole podcast on that, but I mean, it is ridiculous how they tossed in things. I mean, why are we giving money to all these people around the world when we got people dying here? We and the great thing, you guys should check out Section 203 in this bill that doesn't hold social media companies liable for censorship and things like that. Fuck that. I want them to take that out. This is one of the saddest things that we're not going to get in the Democratic presidency and Congress, is that there's going to be no... nobody's going to be against social media conglomerates and censorship. I mean, Democrats are biggest fans of censorship. So we're not going to see any censorship, you know, anybody fighting censorship. I mean, social media is going to be allowed to censor anybody and whoever they want that they don't like. So that sucks. But so anyway, so I don't think there's going to be a much big hit in Q1. I think the stimulus, I think, you know, equity should, risk should perform well. Now, what is the potential for getting screwed? Yeah, if we, you know, if we see a massive surge in fatalities, cases, and, you know, government starts restricting even tighter, then yeah, then we will. And if something happens, but listen, I think there's, you know, I think the Democrats are most likely going to win Georgia, and we'll have a Democratic Congress, and Mitch McConnell is not going to be in power anymore. But from a risk standpoint, this is the government that's going to spend. They're going to spend. They're going to do more stimulus. This is a baby stimulus. Watch how massive a stimulus they're going to put out. That's just going to insanely inflate all asset prices. So from a risk standpoint, from an investing standpoint, all risk assets should love this in the short term. And what's going to happen long term, that's going to be talked about in the next podcast. So, you know, what's another question to think about? You know, what else, other things to think about? You know, will the virus fade away enough in the dense cities so that high-risk services can recover? Yeah. You know, I expect virus fears, you know, that have kept the densest cities and the highest risk consumer services deeply depressed to fade, you know, enough into next year for economic life to kind of largely return to normal in LA, New York City, Chicago, and so on. You know, to make this prediction, you know, I think a little bit concrete, you know, think about employment in the leisure and hospitalities, you know, restaurants and things like that in New York City, which collapsed by nearly, what, 2/3 in April and has leveled off at just 63% of the pre-pandemic level. By end of 2021, I think it'll return to probably 90% of it, at least 90%. I think that's what most economists are predicting as well. So I think, you know, cities and sectors will bounce back strongly next year because, you know, the virus spread will diminish based on the vaccine and so on. So, you know, most likely, you know, most forecasters are saying that a quarter of the U.S. population, you know, is already immune to the virus due to past infection, and half of them will be vaccinated by April. So a share that should keep, you know, creeping up, probably 3/4 of the population by year end. You know, there's obviously some overlap between these two sources of immunity. So, you know, but in combination, there should be enough for the U.S. to reach herd immunity by mid-year. In the months that follow, we definitely, you know, let's see. I think I expect a lot of the consumer activities like dining, travel, entertainment will most likely return to, you know, roughly maybe 75-80% of roughly, you know, normal levels. So, So yeah, I think you know, all this will sort of, now the biggest problem is obviously if this vaccine or this mutation that we're seeing that's going around, that could be just a scare tactic. If it doesn't work, yeah, that's a big risk, you know. And I think that could be a cheap option, that, you know, how you'd go along this potential for a redo of the strain, where we have to rebuild the vaccination, and maybe this thing spreads at a higher rate. So this is something that we need to take into account. But it's, that's a possible tailwind. So we need to be cognizant of that. But otherwise, if that's not a problem, if that risk is, doesn't happen, then yeah, you know, like I said, these are the, these two big questions are going to be, good. You know, will the GDP growth, you know, exceed consensus that we're seeing out there? You know, people, I mean, it could be above consensus growth. I mean, it's possible. You know, there's a, obviously a potential for a transformative impact of vaccine on a, you know, economy whose, you know, output gap kind of lies in mostly in high contact, you know, consumer service industries, you know, that are basically poised to recover, you know, faster. So I think, you know, household spending power is also kind of remaining largely intact. So this, you know, there's a lot of limited long-term damage, right? For the, you know, since the economy collapsed, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic. So what else? Let's see what we should think about in 2021, you know. Productivity level. Will productivity, you know, exceed the level or get to the level that we had before, you know, the trend we had before pre-pandemic? I think, you know, productivity, you know, has surged since the pandemic began, boosted, you know, in part by a positive composition of, you know, effect caused by sharp declines in employment in less productive, virus-sensitive industries like dining. Such positive composition effects are common, you know, at the start of recessions, but they tend to reverse as the economy recovers and less productive sectors and workers return back to their jobs. You know, some reversal we're already seeing, you know, it's already occurred, and a bit more is obviously, you know, will occur over the year. But, you know, there's a lot of reasons that, you know, the pandemic has introduced or accelerated long-lasting productivity gains, you know. First of all, you know, let's think about, you know, productivity enhancing changes in the GDP, you know, especially this acceleration that we're seeing the shift towards e-commerce, right? What is the reason that we'll see a higher productivity and a higher GDP potential in 2021? Everything, this big shift in e-commerce, right? The second is that a recession is likely to, you know, accelerate closures, and which we're kind of seeing is less productive companies and business units of companies after a decade long, you know, the greatest bull market that we saw, a decade long expansion, which is easy access to credit and supportive business environment, making, you know, a lot of cost cutting, less of, you know, like it's basically getting rid of a lot of less productive business parts and, you know, companies. So that should kind of zone in and concentrate on a big higher production, right? And the last reason, I think, is, you know, obviously the pandemic has presented businesses with new opportunities to save heavily on expenses at surprisingly little cost to final output, right? One example is the shift to virtual meetings, which many businesses will continue after the pandemic and will enable them to reduce travel expenditure permanently. We'll see this surprising, which we are seeing already, the surprising feasibility of remote work, which will allow companies to save on office space and cost and tap new low labor, you know, cost markets. So, you know, we'll see people moving out of New York and stuff, moving to Texas, Florida, to, you know, Jackson, you know, all these little places that are going to be so cheap for companies. So we'll see a higher output because of that, from, you know, higher share value and things like that, right? So that will result, you know, in, you know, better productivity, better GDP. You know, we'll see a higher, labor force part, the labor force participation will, you know, bump meaningfully. I got a couple of numbers that you guys might like. You know, labor force currently rate, you know, remains 1.9% below its February level. And after the financial crisis, the participation, you know, rate had drifted lower for many years as workers left the labor force in despair after years of fruitless job search. adding to a steady downward pull on participation from population aging. Whereas here, you know, recent increases in permanent layoffs and long-term unemployment have raised concern that the same problem will occur again, but it seems much unlikely. What, I'll tell you why, because you know, we're seeing an expected participation rise, right? We didn't see that in the financial crisis before. What we're seeing is people, like, the, if you look at some of the numbers, right? So workers, for example, workers have left the labor force not because of job search as being hopeless, but they left because of virus-related obstacles. So once the virus-related obstacles are gone, such as health concerns for older workers or need to care for children who would have otherwise been in school, so these things will be gone, which we didn't have in the first, the great financial crisis. So we'll see all these people come back at a very fast rate. So it should be fine. I don't think that will be a much big issue like we did in the big recession we had in 2008. What's another big thing from an investment standpoint? The Fed. Let's just talk about the Fed real quick. You know, will the Fed begin to, you know, kind of start tapering the asset purchases? No, the Fed is not. I mean, the FOMC indicated that it will continue to increase its treasury holdings by at least $80 billion per month and its MBS holdings by at least $40 billion per month. You know, as they said, until substantial further progress has been made toward the committee's maximum employment and price stability goals. This is in the FOMC report. So, and for people who kind of don't understand a couple of these things, listen, I have a great boot camp on my website, wizardofsoho.com. So go, I'll put a discount on it. Go get that boot camp. You'll be able to understand my podcast a lot better as well. It's a great way to learn a little bit about macroeconomy that will help you in your investing and just help you learn new things. So go, I'm telling you, you learn this in the school, you'll probably have to pay like, you know, $5,000-$6,000. I have it for like $100 or something on my Instagram. So on my website. So go to wizardofsoho.com and make sure if you want to go buy that bootcamp, I'll put a couple up. This will help you understand a couple of these things I talk about in my podcast better. So, I don't think the Fed is going to stop. I mean, you know, Chair Powell declined to define the substantial further progress required for the start of tapering with specific numbers. And obviously, there's a large range of views on the FOMC because of that. But the best guess is that most participants had in mind conditions, you know, end of 2021. I think they think things are going to get better, like 5% unemployment, 1.8% inflation. So, you know, I mean, I do think that FOMC will want to start tapering at least a year and a half before it lifts off, starts raising rates, so that it can start tapering gradually and then pause before the first rate hike. But I don't think any of that's going to happen until 2025. Like, I don't think we're going to have a rate hike till, you know, 2024, 2025. So I think that's okay. The last thing from, macroeconomy investing that I want to talk about is the trade war part, that what's going to happen with China and trade war. Will the tariff rate on imports decline and all that? Yes. I mean, you know, during the campaign, President-elect Biden said only that he would reevaluate tariffs upon taking office. And the consensus view appears to be that tariffs will stay in place. But however, I expect that we'll see some decline because a lot of the, you know, party who's coming into power now are big fans of China, and a lot of Chinese lobbyists have given a lot of, you know, are very tight with them. So I think we'll see some decline in tariffs during the first year of Biden. New tariffs look very unlikely. There's a good chance that some narrowly applied tariff on like steel, aluminum, and other products import from U.S. Could be reduced as they look to, you know, kind of mend relations with China. The fate of tariffs on imports from China is kind of harder to, overall predict. But I think they'll reduce all the stuff. The rest of the policy obviously looks kind of unclear until we get this January 5th runoff election in Georgia. And maybe I'll talk about that a little bit more. Or, you know, just I always talk about it on my Instagram. So make sure you guys follow me there. All right, let's, this should be good for just for my own core ideas, but let's go through a couple of the questions that you guys asked me. Let me just pull it up on my Instagram. So let's just see, a lot of questions here. What are the Wizards' top goals for 2021? Honestly, I have a couple of personal goals. I have some fitness goals. Obviously, I want to be in great shape. I'm actually coming up with this Wizards 90-Day Fitness Challenge. It's actually a mental and body fitness challenge. So it's a mental health and physical health challenge. I'll be posting it on my Instagram. So make sure you guys follow me. It's a 90-day challenge. I'm going to create a group of us, a channel for us that we can kind of, you know, motivate each other for 90 days and kind of do this challenge. It's going to be fitness, mental health. I'll talk about it more on my Instagram, so make sure you guys follow me there. So I got those mental health goals, fitness goals, and I also have some monetary goals or some dollar numbers I want to reach. And I want to make sure I launch my wine company for people who have been following me for years, know how much I'm into wine and champagne. And I have my own wine company coming out. I have potentially two partners. And it's going to be a beautiful Cabernet Sauvignon. We've already been tasting the bottles. We're making the labels and bottles right now. It'll probably be 2-3 months. So if you want to know more about that, reach out to me on my Instagram and I'll tell you. So those are my goals for 2021 for now. Reach out to me on my Instagram and tell me what your goals are for everyone. Care to share your workout regimen? From a workout point, I've been doing a lot of... I was in a bulk phase earlier. I was lifting a lot of heavy weights, powerlifting. A lot of bench, squats, clean and jerks, things like that. Now I'm at cutting phase, so I'm starting to do more cardio. I've made my diet much stricter, and this is going to be planned part of the Wizards 90-Day Challenge, where I'm going to be basically cutting, weight and trying to cut fat off my body to be in great shape for 2021. So cardio, 30 minutes cardio, a very strict diet, relatively strict. I sometimes, let myself cheat and stuff, but that's okay. All right, what else we got here? Have you looked at CDC data and seen COVID as no more deadly than the flu? I've already talked a lot about the COVID stuff in my podcast today, so I will leave it at that. All right, let's see what else questions we got here. I'm learning Python. I know some R. Should I learn C++ as well for Wall Street? I think for Wall Street and people I hire and friends like mine, at hedge funds and banks who hire, I think if you're going into sales and trading, especially trading nowadays, you need to have some strong quantitative skills. So I think you need, and I actually have a whole thing put on my website. So go to my website and subscribe to it. And you guys can see I put a whole list of how you can increase your odds of getting into Wall Street, especially if you don't go to an Ivy League or Target University. There's a whole bunch of content, so you have to subscribe and you'll see all the articles in there. So all the skills that you need, how you can get ahead in front of everybody else, or how if you work on Wall Street currently and want to get to front office or get ahead or learn, get the bootcamp and go subscribe to my website and you can see all kinds of information I've put there, articles after articles. So it's all good. What else is questions here? Do you think the Fed will have negative rates? No. The Fed has been very clear. And the Fed has so many tools that they don't need to go negative rates. So there's no... I don't think that they're going to have any... they're going to have any negative rates. So I don't think that's a concern. Let's see what else we got here. What else? When are you doing a podcast? Yep, here we go. We're doing the podcast right now. Bitcoin, listen, what do we want me to say on Bitcoin? I mean, if you have a risk allocation, remember I talked about how you should allocate to risk depending on your job and your finances. If you have an allocation to risk that you're okay with investing in risky things, sure, go into Bitcoin. I think someday the technology of Bitcoin will be core, but Bitcoin is not going to replace any currency anytime soon. You need to have more than, there is 16 trillion of, the US dollar supply. You need something that can replace the US dollar. So, I don't want to get too much into this podcast with it. We're almost at 52 minutes. But I'll do a whole podcast on, next podcast on Bitcoin and the dollar supply and how, what my strong views are and stuff like that. But if you want to invest, that's up to you. I have some small stuff in it, but it's because I have a small allocation to risk. And in that allocation, I have to high risk stuff. And in that high risk, if you want to allocate, you help yourself. But I'll make a whole, it's very long and I have a lot of dots on it. So I'll make a whole podcast on talking about that in detail. What are your New Year's resolutions? I already mentioned that my goals for 2021. Let's see what else questions you guys have asked here. I'm just going. Did you hit rock bottom before getting to where you are now? Well, that's a very deep question. If you see one of my previous podcasts, I did a whole podcast on mental health and stuff, but I'll do another podcast on mental health and kind of talk about that a little bit more. There's obviously, you guys know I'm a big proponent of mental health, especially mental health in men that are not, you know, kind of looked at as much. So I'll do a little bit deeper. Yes, I have hit rock bottom mentally and physically before, which kind of changed my perspective on the world. So we'll do a whole thing on that. Wine question, Napa over Left Bank. Yes, I'm a Napa boy. I mean, I love Napa wines, the big fruit. I mean, the wine that I'm coming up with is going to be a Napa wine. So yeah, Napa over Bordeaux all day. I'm sorry, all you Europeans who are probably going to hate on me. But yeah, I'm a Napa boy. So America, baby. Best stories from Europe. You know what? I'm going to do, I think this one, I've talked a lot about passionate things and we're reaching the 1 hour mark, but I'll do a whole podcast. Every podcast I do, I'm gonna do a one fun story of, you know, maybe a Wall Street party story or running with celebrity or something like that. So we'll do something like that. Top three favorite wines. I post about wines all the time on my Instagram. I also have a wine Instagram for people who don't know. It's Your Wine Plug. So it's a wine. I post a lot of wine stuff on there. My favorite champagnes, everything I've posted on there. It's Your Wine Club. I know I got a lot of Instagrams posts. So until they all get banned. Let's see what else questions are here that could be fun. It would be cool for you to cover mental health again. Yep, I'm going to do a whole podcast on it again. How do we know if this is the wizard if your name is not the wizard? That's a great question. Maybe I'll try and think of a new name so that Instagram can't come after me. You know, maybe you guys can give me some ideas on my new Instagram name. So let's see. How can retail traders focus on macro plays? Yeah, you guys, everybody can focus on macro plays. Every investment that you do should all come down from macro play unless you're just picking stocks. And even stock picking has macro components to it. Think about the world. Think about how I kind of went on, you know, what are the big questions for 2021? See where the risks lie in the market. Think about what are the potential risks and then kind of break down from there. You know, is China the risk? Is virus the risk? And then see, okay, if virus is the risk, what are the things that can, you know, make virus go up or down? And then see what are the securities that can help you make, you know, virus go up and down? Why not? All right, long-term economic and social impact of QE and government borrowing. This kind of goes inside with the money supply and safe haven assets. And this is a whole podcast in itself. So this will be in the next week's podcast. How to meditate properly. So this is how I get this question all the time. And you know what? I'll kind of end it at this question because we're reaching the... I want to kind of make these, you know, just an hour long. I used to only make them 30 minutes, but I owe you guys a podcast. I made it an hour long. The way I do meditation or how, you know, I kind of think about it is I usually do in the morning and at night. I do 15 minutes or 10 to 15 minutes in the morning when I wake up and usually 5 minutes at night before I go to sleep. The way I kind of got into it is by guided meditation. So I use the Peloton app and I use Calm app, or you could just go on YouTube and probably find videos. Just start off simple. Just start off with some guided breathing exercises and then you can get into deeper stuff like body scan or transcendental and things like that. But just start off with just guided meditation, 10 minutes. Just try and clear your mind and watch your breathing. You know, breathe in 8 seconds, hold it in for 8 seconds, and then breathe out 8 seconds. Just do that for 5 minutes, and then you can sort of build into that. So start off with that, and that's a good way. And you know what? I'll talk, you know, reach out to my Instagram, and I can tell you a little bit more. But I think we're going to close it at this. Thank you again. You know, I want to say thank you to all my followers who have supported me, especially after getting banned. In 2 days, we went from 0 to 7,500 followers. Thank you to everybody who's reposting me, all the big accounts. Reach out, you know, all my followers, please reach out to big accounts and, you know, tell them to repost me if they can so we can get our, you know, all the people who are following can find me again. We can't let people do this to us. We cannot have censorship. This is America. This is not, you know, it's Russia and China. Like, we cannot have censorship. So thank you. Please follow me at The Bond Army on Instagram, at Not The Wizard of Soho on Instagram. for wine stuff, follow me at Your Wine Plug. My website is wizardofsoho.com. There's tons of content on there. Subscribe. If you want to join the Alphaholics, go to Alphaholics Anon Instagram or go to alphaholicsanonymous.com and apply. If you guys want to show your support, you know, I put out merch every 4 months, the No Trust Fund Gang. We came from nothing. We have No Trust Fund. And I put out hoodies, No Trust Fund. And I'm going to put one, I'm going to put them out this week. Please tell your friends, tell everyone to follow me on Instagram so we can rebuild our community. And thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for following me, staying with me. And let's rebuild this community again in 2021. And let's come out even stronger and bigger. And, you know, let's all go and do what we do best. Let's go grind. Let's go crush it. And let's never take no for an answer. Let's never. The only people that's stopping us from reaching our glory, reaching our full potential. And that is the only thing we all should have. Our only goal should be to hit our own personal peak. There is no other role model that you need other, not me, not anyone, no Jeff Bezos, nobody. Our own role model is the best version of ourselves. So let's focus on ourselves in 2021 and try and hit the best version of ourselves. Thank you, everyone, and appreciate it, and God bless you.